There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Afternoon, all. Welcome to The Grill. We're broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on. And we're up top again. We're back on top down here at Barasti, up on the rooftop garden. So if you are heading down to Barasti, if you're anywhere near, do come and say hi, because we've got the best seats in the house for plenty of sport. Bournemouth against Manchester United is the early kickoff in the Premier League. There's an early up in Scotland as well, and over in Spain. We're over all of those with the goals. From 6 o'clock, we turn our attention to the London Stadium, West Ham against Burnley, courtesy of our friends at West Ham United Media Department. That's from 6 p.m. this evening. Plus, we've got Arsenal against Liverpool, big one, from 8:30 live here on Dubai I-103.8. Bundesliga kicks off at 6:30 p.m. Italian Serie A kicks off at 6 p.m. We are on 1 hour later, I must mention that as well. We started an hour later for those tuning in at 3 o'clock and going, what on earth's happened to the grill? We are taking into account the changing of the clocks back in the Northern Hemisphere, and therefore to accommodate our Premier League responsibilities and commitments, we are from 4 until 7 now. Live here from Barasti, where the game is always on. The Autumn Internationals get underway over in the United Kingdom. We will have all the latest from those a little later on in proceedings, and all the build-up as well. Federer taking on Djokovic in the Masters at the moment, plus USC 230 to look forward to. Cormier against Lesnar's probably the big one a little later on in proceedings. There is cricket to bring you up to date with. There is golf to talk about, and much, much more. Plus, lest we forget, plenty of events right here in the UAE. Sport is basically on your agenda between now and 7 p.m. So if you are anywhere near Barasti, please do come and join us. Just get into Barasti and look up, head north, go as high as you can, up here to the rooftop garden. Some very special drink promotions whilst we are on air between 4 and 7 o'clock, plus the best view of the big screen, which will be showing Premier League and, of course, Autumn Internationals between now and the end of play. Head down to Barasti to be part of the proceedings, listening to Dubai I-103.8. It is The Grill.
Let's go!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Sport aplenty for you between now and 7 o'clock, and after that right here on Dubai Eye 103.8, and even further afield into the wee small hours down here at Barasti. Who's going to be talking to us between now and 7 p.m? We have The Grill panel on board, plus we've got our roving correspondents at various sporting events across the world, bring us bang up to date with all the latest information, be it team news, be it goals, be it developments, and of course opinions are plenty. Talking of those opinions, yours count for everything here on The Grill, so please do share them with us. You can text them to us now on 4001. You can have your say at Dubai I-103.8 FM, or you can have your say at Dubai iSport. Equally, get in touch with myself or any of the Grill panellists, courtesy of their individual handles. The first of those is the Kiwi Oracle, that is at the Kiwi Oracle, I should say. Mr. Mark Archer joins us live from the rooftop. Good to be back on top, Arch.
Afternoon, Thomas, Christopher, and all the listeners. Yes, great up here. The weather's cooled down nicely. We're up at the garden roof terrace, and it's overlooking the big screen. Plenty of work being done around Barasti, but it's a fantastic place to be. If you're looking to somewhere to catch all this sporting action this afternoon, there is plenty to talk about, whether it be English Premier League football, or if you want to come down and watch the rugby, 7 o'clock, I can give you the kickoff time. England taking on South Africa then. It's all happening down at Barasti. So plenty of big screens, plenty of F&B to enjoy, and I'm sure the crowds will be storming down here to Barasti throughout the afternoon, wanting to catch some of the action.
Exactly, looking forward to that. I mean, just in terms of marking a card, Archie, you got a couple of times there for us. Obviously, we're going to talk in detail about these Autumn Internationals. Much anticipation ahead of those. We'll be talking about the result, Japan against New Zealand earlier on. But in terms of what, when, where, when do we need to be in place to watch these games later?
Well, get on down here now, Tom, because we've got two kickoffs coming. Four matches today in the Autumn Internationals. Earlier match was in Tokyo. That was the All Blacks taking on Japan. But mark your cards for this afternoon. 6:45 p.m. live from Cardiff is Wales taking on Scotland. Bit of a funny one, this, because we talk about Autumn Internationals. Well, it's like a Six Nations clash, isn't it, really? But I think the big match today everyone's talking about, 7 o'clock, live from Twickenham, southwest London. England facing the might of a resurgent South Africa. 7 p.m. And if you're really keen, come on down, because there's a 12 o'clock kickoff. It's live from Chicago. It's Ireland taking on Italy, if you want to get hold of that match as well. So 6:45, Wales, Scotland, 7 o'clock, England, South Africa. And then for the late ones like yourself, Tom, and Chris McCarty, Chicago time, 12 p.m. midnight, Ireland taking on Italy.
That's at the Kiwi Oracle. You're at Chris McCarty.
1-9. Why? 19. Lucky number, Tom, and Chris McCarty was taken by the time I jumped on Twitter.
By who?
Listen, 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way up to 18 was gone, so I'm Chris McCarty, 19.
Outrageous.
Born on the 19th of August, lucky number as
Don't
well.
Don't they know who you are?
I know, right? I've sent a litany of emails to Twitter and I'm still waiting for that blue tick as well.
He's marked our card, Chris McCarty. You're going to mark our card as well because we got plenty to get through football-wise.
Indeed, there's good reason why I've roted myself on the grill this afternoon, Tom.
Because last weekend, didn't you?
Yeah, I did indeed. The nonsense that was Middlesbrough against Derby. There is a much bigger game to look forward to, and no disrespect to either Middlesbrough or Derby fans out there, but the early kickoff in the English Premier League, 4:30, so we're about, 20 minutes or so away from kickoff down there on the south coast. It is Bournemouth taking on Manchester United. I'll give you team news in just a moment. There is an early over in Spain as well, Leganés taking on Atletico Madrid, and an early in Scotland that I'll be keeping a very close eye on too. It is St Mirren against Rangers. A Rangers side beaten by Aberdeen in the League Cup semi-final last weekend, a 1-1 draw midweek against Kilmarnock. Steven Gerrard has already laid down the gauntlet to his men, saying that if they cannot get results, then he essentially will sell them all and buy better players. So look out for that one. That one off at 4:30. I'll keep you abreast of all the goals, whether it be England, Scotland, or over in Spain.
We'd like to start with the big stories of the day, the shockers, if you like, to get the guys' thoughts on that straight off the bat. The boys have been thrown into bat. We're back on top. We love it up here on not another one. That was you. You just sabotaged that. We were talking about the fact that I'd lost my R. Now you've taken away my IQ as well. What are you doing, Mark Archer? They're dropping like flies at the moment. I'm talking about the letters just behind us. That's the clunk you just hear. Hit the floor a minute ago. Anyway, that was Interrupt My Flow with regards to the big stories in the world of sport and one of the most shocking stories that we've had to report on in the last 12 hours or so is the news that a certain Usain Bolt is to leave his role down in Australia. We didn't see that one coming, did we, Chris McCarty?
No, we didn't. And he's already turned down a move to Malta as well with Valletta FC. So where Usain Bolt takes his football career next remains to be seen. It was interesting
joke,
to
though,
see.
Wasn't it, from the beginning, wasn't
a
it?
Little. Yeah, I mean, listen, it's all about eyeballs, isn't it? It's a publicity stunt more than anything. It was interesting to read some comments from a few of the players down in the A-League saying that he has a touch like a trampoline. Now, if anyone that's watched Manchester United this season will know that Romelu Lukaku has a similar first touch, that the ball seems to go away from him as opposed to sticking to him. Usain Bolt's footballing career, he is a big name, he does put bums on seats, but is he good enough to make it as a professional football player? It depends who you talk to, it depends which league. Interesting to see though, he was wearing a lovely little three-piece suit down at Derby Day, the Flemington Racecourse today.
Oh, it was nice, Derby Day,
fantastic day for Godolphin, we'll talk about that a little later as well, I'm sure. But he is there, he's enjoying himself, but the news over the course of the past 24 hours is that he will not be given a professional contract by the Central Coast Mariners. He was on trial there, he scored twice against lower league opposition. The world went mad. We all thought Usain Bolt was the next Ronaldo, I think, or certainly some people did. But he still awaits a professional contract. Where he gets that remains to be seen. As I say, he's already turned down a deal in Malta.
Let me put I jest a little. We will get to some of the big stories of the day. I only jest because I find this story a little bit ridiculous. I stand by my opinion that in this day and age, gone are the days where you could sort of flip-flop between sports at the very top professional level, etc. You know, Ian Botham played professional football, flip-flopped over into cricket, continued playing into those. But that was a different era altogether. It was that pre-professional era in the world of sport. You can't, in this day and age, perform at that level in two sports.
Not when you're 32 years of age, is all I would say. I mean, I'm sure
well,
he is.
Any age, for that matter.
I mean,
because the demands
was it Deion Sanders? Was it Deion Sanders over in the US? Played what, baseball and a little bit of NFL?
He played a lot of NFL and a little bit of baseball. Yeah, I mean, and we've seen it. I mean, from where I'm from, New Zealand, we've seen a lot of top sportsmen play rugby and cricket. You know,
Not recently.
No, I think the demands now is
that's my point.
Extremely difficult now.
Professional sport now. The demands on. Let's
remember. You know, Usain Bolt's retired. He's not running anymore. He's on a PR tour of the world, really, to keep his brand and keep himself ever present. And I think he is one of those iconic sort of sportsmen now who goes anywhere and he's Usain Bolt, the fastest man ever.
But I think that is, again, this is... Oh, my God, I nearly went there. I think that's the point that I'm trying to make, is the fact that you know, you get people who get to the end of their career and they think, oh, you know, I fancy being a golfer or I fancy trying out an NFL. If you want to make a name for yourself, you need to commit to that sport from a very young age and take the knocks with the promotion.
Well, we're about to watch and see with great interest, certainly for myself, Christian Wade, who of course has given up his career over with Wasps, and he's now attempting to make it as a wide receiver in the NFL. He isn't the first to try and do that. There have been many before him, and many who have failed. Interesting to see. I think he's decided at the age of 27, struggled to break into the England setup, whether that is with Eddie Jones. He struggled before that as well. So he's made the decision to try now at the age of 27 as he reaches his physical peak, I guess. But you're totally right, Tom. I think all sports now have reached a level of professionalism whereby you have to be incredibly naturally talented to make that step up, because if you're not committing at an early age, all of the minutiae, if you will, all of the technical abilities that you require in that chosen sport, if you're not perfecting those at a young age, then it becomes oh so difficult. Now, nigh on impossible, I would say, to make that switch over.
And that's why, Archie, that's why we hear that professional sportsmen or sportsmen make a choice from a young age, isn't it? Phil Neville is a very good cricketer by all accounts. Matt Letizier, we heard the other day, is a very good cricketer by all accounts. But they had to make a choice. And we all know people who are very gifted sports-wise, but they need to make a choice if you're going to make a name for
yourself. I guess the one for you, Arch, would be Sonny Bill Williams, right? I mean, a boxer, but again, who's he really beaten? Not that I would argue with anyone who
but then you've got two different sports in rugby league where he reached the pinnacle of that. One won NRL awards, won best players in that division, and has been now played 50 test matches for the All Blacks. So there's an example.
No, it's the same sport.
Well, what about then?
Where Israel Folau, AFL.
AFL, NRL, and that. Or where do you place a Conor McGregor? Is that not, doesn't even count?
No, it doesn't count.
Same sport, different sport, just a shambles.
I mean... who's the Aussie guy? NRL went over to NFL.
Jared Hayne.
Yep. Jared Haynes, yep. Yeah.
But didn't make it.
Well, you say that. He took some snaps.
Well, yeah, but he quit, basically. He didn't make it. He wasn't good enough. He wasn't going to get a professional contract. He wasn't going to get continued.
But again, that's a similar sport, I suppose, isn't it? It's a.
So you're comparing NFL rugby league to NFL. Totally different sports.
Different sports, but in the contact, in the physicality of the two, similar.
Yes, but
not like
you've got to
running
learn.
100 metres to football.
Yeah, no, that's two different sports.
Here's another one for you. Tony Drago, snooker and pool.
Not even that.
The Maltese wizard.
Not even that. That's the exact same. I suppose, the most recent one I can think of, and I think...
Maltese magician, as he was.
What was the... Cullen, wasn't it? Was it Christian? No, who was your winger? Who was the...
Jeff Wilson.
Jeff Wilson.
So Jeff Wilson did play...
That must be the most recent one, wasn't it?
Jeff Wilson had a very successful rugby career. 1995, played a lot of tests for the All Blacks on the wing and fullback, but he also played one day international cricket for New Zealand. And I think he did both by the time he was 19.
Yeah.
Really talented sportsman to switch that. But yeah, cricket and rugby now, which was traditionally which guys in New Zealand would do, that was the summer sport and the winter sport. Guys could mix and match, but now you've got to remember Super Rugby and stuff starts in January and kicks off, but that's the middle of the cricket season.
That's the other point now, is that there's gone are those days where you could have a winter sport and a summer sport, because sport now is all year round.
Absolutely. And we'll put it out there, 4001, if any of our listeners can think of any other athlete, male or female, who have perhaps mastered two sports, we'd love to hear it. I think...
One of the famous ones, we talked about Deion Sanders there in American sport, but Bo Jackson also did the same thing. Amazing running back, and also had a great Major League Baseball career as well.
Yeah, it seems that baseball and NFL, and that would tally in with what you said, winter and summer sports, it seems that they have had...
And that kind of works images. Because the NFL season is quite short and compact. It sort of runs from September through to January, and you might get knocked out. And then the baseball season really is, they report for preseason in April, and it finishes in sort of September, October. Yeah. So you can see how it could match. It'd be tough if you're go deep into the... I mean, we saw the World Series actually end in the last week, but the NFL season's now been going for basically 6 weeks. Yeah. So that would be tough to marry those two sports together now.
I'm scraping the barrel a bit here, but I suppose it sort of counts. Ivan Lendl played, obviously, great tennis throughout his career, but then went on... And he registered. He plays on the pro tour, on the seniors pro tour, doesn't he? In golf.
And God, does he really?
Yeah,
I did not know that.
Yeah,
I don't think he's incredibly successful as a golfer, though. I think he.
Yeah, but to get his card for the seniors pro tour.
I tell
that's a success, isn't it?
Who was the wicket keeper? His name's gone. His name escapes me. Who was the wicketkeeper that had to retire early? He was part of the England team that won the T20.
Craig Kieswetter.
Craig Kieswetter. He's now on the European Challenge Tour. Golf. And he's a handy golfer as well, yeah. He had to retire, didn't he? Was it an eye injury?
Yeah, I think he got a bail in the eye.
Bail in the eye, and he's gone. And I'm sure, if I double-check that, I'm sure he's now on the European Challenge Tour. Golf. Craig Kieswetter.
Absolutely minted as well, Craig Kieswetter.
Is he really?
Absolutely minted. Yeah,
I tell you who was a very, very,
isn't
very
he? Because he, what's the story with Kieswetter? His dad, which county did he play for?
He played for Somerset.
Dad, I think, is basically the benefactor of Somerset. And otherwise, he's from a hugely wealthy family, and that's what's helped progress him. I'm sure that's what's.
I think there's a couple of guys
diplomatic there, Tom.
There's a couple of South African athletes or sportsmen that we could point fingers to probably could have made it at other sports. AB de Villiers, I'm led to believe,
yes,
is an incredibly gifted cricketer, as we know, one of the best ever at all three formats. But he was an extremely good tennis player and also extremely good rugby player in his time. Herschel Gibbs, who I've seen firsthand, again, had a very successful career as a professional cricketer, but was an equally good rugby player, schoolboy rugby player, played for South Africa at schoolboys, but also a footballer. Could almost play South African schoolboys at football, and obviously chose to go with cricket.
I've done my research on Craig Kieswetter, and I say done my research, I've just landed on his Wikipedia page. I've got to read out this couple of lines for you, and again, just take this at face value. In late 2016, he took part in a couple of PGA Euro Pro Tour tournaments and won on the MENA Golf Tour. In early 2017, he turned professional and in March played in the MENA Golf Tour qualifying school in Morocco, finishing tied for 31st place and earning a card for the 2017 season. He played regularly on the tour during the 2017, and in September, he won his biggest prize of the season, winning $360 in the Dubai Creek Open after finishing tied for 38th place.
Oh, wow. Okay, so he's here as well.
He was.
Look at that.
And his biggest prize, $360, which is about, 1,200 dirhams?
Yeah. Yeah,
glad he's minted then.
I think he's good for that. Listen, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll have more of your thoughts. Do keep them coming in. I'm getting loads of text messages already on this one, so keep your thoughts coming in. 4001. Any examples of sportsmen who've flip-flopped in between sports, have been very good at one sport and then transferred their skills to another, have given up one sport and taken up another? If you can think of any that we're missing out at the beginning of the show, then please do get in touch. We have got some team news for you ahead of Bournemouth against Manchester United next.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
Bournemouth against Manchester United on the big screen down here at Barasti. Beautiful evening, lovely breeze, perfect temperature. Get you down here to watch this one and all the other sport throughout the afternoon. It is Bournemouth against Manchester United. Let's hear from the Manchester United manager. Now, he believes that the Bournemouth star is one that is currently rising.
After the promotion was the season of be a Premier League team and stay as a Premier League team, and then stability, and now they want more than stability and they are fighting for this Europa League positions just below the top four target. That is obviously a very, very difficult target for anyone, but fantastic work, great stability, same manager, same players, basically, clinical scouting work, clinical decisions about who to buy and when to buy. I think fantastic work.
What about his opposing number today, Eddie Howe, who's doing some great jobs down there? However, he might want to have a quick word with some of his key players as well, who've been speaking out of turn ahead of this one, and more so than Simon Francis, who midweek described Manchester United as not scary anymore. Not helpful, says Eddie Howe.
Well, despite that Simon is the captain of the players, on this occasion I would... I don't know whether he's been misquoted or whether that's genuinely, perhaps. Yeah, I think that's, I wouldn't agree with that. I think whenever you play Manchester United at Bournemouth, I think Manchester United are favourites for the game. I've got no problem with that. I think we need to know the players need to know to get anything out of this game. We have to really excel and play perhaps even above what we've done at any time this season to get a positive result. So that's my message to the players.
So, in light of those comments, does Simon Francis get into Eddie's team today? Chris McCarty.
He certainly does, Tom. Team news down there at the Vitality Stadium. Asmir Begovic, who has been an ever-present this season, the big Bosnian, starts in goals. It's a back four. Simon Francis in at right back. Steve Cook and Nathan Ake, the young Dutch defender who has really kicked on since his big money move to Bournemouth from Chelsea. An awful lot of big clubs, including United, Manchester City, Tottenham, all been linked with Nathan Ake in recent weeks. It will be Adam Smith in at left back. Midfield two will be of Lewis Cook, the young Englishman, and Jefferson Lerma, the record signing, the Colombian, who came in for big money in the summer from Levante. Then come the exciting attacking three. This, it's going to be Junior Stanislas on the right, David Brooks, who really has been a real find for Eddie Howe in the off-season, bought from Sheffield United for big money as well, the young Welshman, but has really kicked on in his debut season in the Premier League. And then comes the Scottish wide man, little Ryan Fraser, so diminutive, what a player he has become. Up front, leading the line, is a man who I think is destined for big things. I think one day we will see him in an England shirt. That is the former Coventry man, Callum Wilson. So Bournemouth are going for it. Eddie Howe not shutting up shop. He's got attacking players, he's got pace, bags of it in that team, and they'll look to frighten a Manchester United side who, as you heard there, one or two of the Bournemouth players are saying, are not scary anymore.
Let's go to Manchester United for you today. The big news is that they're playing in pink. No, it's not. The big news is that there is no Lukaku. Now, there's a reason for this.
Yeah, indeed. Jose Mourinho, speculation whirling, as it always does when the team news comes out, that perhaps there's been a falling out. Jose Mourinho has been speaking to BT Sport, the host broadcasters over there in the UK, to say that Romelu Lukaku felt something, a little niggle, after training yesterday. They will have it.
Stomach?
Perhaps. Yeah, perhaps. I mean, as I said last week, there's no doubt in my mind that he is a good half stone overweight, Romelu Lukaku.
So obvious for everyone to see. And he's unfortunate. He's one of those players that carries it as well,
yeah,
isn't he?
Absolutely. He's a John Hartson-esque, isn't he? So maybe, just maybe, Jose Mourinho, a little bit of masking the real issue there. But for whatever reason, we've got to take him at face value. Romelu Lukaku has not travelled to the South Coast today. So the Manchester United team is as follows. David De Gea in goals. It's a back four of Ashley Young, Chris Smalling, Victor Lindelof and Luke Shaw. Midfield three today. Fred comes in, Nemanja Matic and Paul Pogba. And then the attacking three. Excited, I really am, by the omission of Romelu Lukaku, because Juan Mata will start from the right. Such a lovely little player, Juan Mata, when he plays centrally. I do worry sometimes that with his lack of pace on the right, he isn't as effective as he potentially could be at number 10. Where I am excited today is that Alexis Sanchez will be given a central role. Now, he struggled as Alexis Sanchez since signing, but there were one or two signs in the off-season that centrally suits him. And I've got a funny feeling that he may just be the match winner today. And then out on that left-hand side is the Manchester United player who is on form. It is Anthony Martial, fresh from scoring yet again against Everton in that 2-1 win last weekend. So they are both of the teams. We've had a minute silence down at the Vitality Stadium. Yeah. And we are just awaiting now kickoff in the early kickoff from the Premier League.
They are playing in pink, though.
They are indeed, yeah. Manchester United, I think is it their third strip or their second? I think it may be their second, you know, Tom, the pink.
It's probably the second away strip.
It could well be the second away strip, which means it's the third strip, but they're trying to tap into Juventus, or it looks a bit like Palermo's kit all those years back.
Just on a serious note, obviously it is Remembrance Sunday tomorrow over in the United Kingdom, Poppy Sunday in memory of all those that have fallen in the two world wars to date, of significance this year, specific significance, because it is the 100-year, the centenary celebrations of the, or remembrances of the culmination of the First World War. Celebrations, the wrong word to use there. But in light of that, there will be minute silence at all grounds. Yeah. Add on to that, I think there will be extended minute silence as well, given the tragedy that the world of football and the world in general is trying to come to terms with, the loss of the Leicester owner, Vichai, round about this time last week.
Indeed, Vichai, who a man who did so much good work, not only over there in Thailand, but certainly in the city of Leicester, and the tragic loss of not only him, but the pilot, the co-pilot, two of his staff as well, has been felt, not just in Leicester, but across the footballing community, Tom. And I was very interested to read this morning that after their game, Leicester, who made the journey down to Cardiff by bus, that was out of respect. They didn't feel that it was, I guess, at the right timing to fly down there. They took the bus down to Cardiff. That every one of those players will then board a flight bound for Thailand, that they will attend the funeral of their owner, and it will be yet more emotions that those players are going through. Interested to see how they cope with those emotions. It was interesting as well to read that Neil Warnock, the Cardiff boss, saying that his players have been caught up in it all as well, because there has been such an outpouring of emotion throughout football over this past few days because for the tragic nature of it. So we wish everyone well. Good luck to Leicester, good luck to the Cardiff players as well, and let's hope for a barnstorming match that can really celebrate the life of that Leicester City.
Goes without saying that obviously the Carabao Cup tie they had midweek against Southampton was postponed. That was too soon. Are you surprised that this game is going ahead today?
No, not surprised. Apparently it was the players' decision. I think they raised the fact that maybe they could request the match be postponed, and I think the players said, look, the best tribute to their former owner is actually get on the pitch and perform and put in a performance that he'd be proud of. Amazing stories coming in such a tragedy. I don't know if you read about the Kasper Schmeichel situation, whereas he traditionally goes out and sees the owner off. It's part of the thing, he had such a relationship with the owner, and he did so last weekend, and he basically saw the helicopter come down and crash and had to be held back by, I think, security guards from actually going in and trying to rescue or be part of sort of some sort of rescue mission with it. So such sad and tragic stories coming from Leicester, but hopefully they'll get through that. They've been such a resilient club, and yeah, you know, no better show what they did a couple of seasons ago, which was a fairy tale, and let's hope they emerge. I'm sure they'll emerge stronger for it.
I had the privilege of meeting Vichai on a number of occasions because obviously he was a great polo patron, and he did with polo what he did with football in many ways. You know, he took on a team, he built a team around a couple of key players, and from scratch in a couple of seasons went from no one in the polo world ever having heard of King Power to winning back-to-back titles and winning some of the biggest tournaments around the world and really putting a statement down. So fascinating guy, very endearing, really had time for everybody as well, which was lovely to see. What my only hope and my only comment on this one would be, I think the line of inheritance, if you like, it's in very good hands, because his boys, specifically Top, who's very much involved with Leicester and is very much involved with the King Power polo team as well, are cut from the same cloth as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. And you would like to think, and again, you've got to respect the family's decision on this. Of course you do. They might feel that it's better to step away now with this. But given the outpouring of emotion, and, you know, it's often said the family spirit of a football club. I think we throw that, we bandy that around a little bit. What we have seen is that football club has very much felt like a family over the course of the past 7 days. And they often say, isn't there's nothing like a tragedy to bring people together. And in that respect, you know, Kasper Schmeichel, the emotion, it's raw, it's real. Jamie Vardy, emotion, raw and real. We've seen Craig Shakespeare return to the King Power Stadium over the course of the past 7 days as well. Claudio Ranieri as well. So it has, I hate to say, united a city once again. Not that it was split, but what it has done, it's reminded us that football is just a game, it is just a sport, but more than that, there are some very good people at the heart of these communities, these footballing communities. And I would like to think that Top will have received huge support, not only from the Leicester players and staff, from the city of Leicester, from the footballing community. And that will now, again, he's going to make that own decision for himself and the family. I respect and appreciate that, Tom. But I do hope that maybe he can kick on now and honour his father's legacy by bringing more success to Leicester City Football Club.
If you want to send us your thoughts with regards to the tragedy that is and has beset not just Leicester Football Club, but King Power and all the brands in and under King Power with the loss of Vichai and four others in that tragic helicopter crash. And just those pictures as well. It was the fact that it was so immediate, wasn't it? The fact that, you know, that tradition of the helicopter taking off from the centre circle as it does after every single home game there at Leicester. The fact that, you know, being who were just themselves getting, not being, I should say, BT Sport, who were getting over what has been a very difficult day for them on that day, with Glenn Holder collapsing in their studios on the morning of. They'd cancelled the late soccer scores game or whatever. And then for them to be, you know, witnessing the taking off of the helicopter for its very short and very tragic last ever journey, it was just also apparent and upon us.
It was real.
It made it so real.
And social media as well. And again, you have to be very careful. I was seeing one or two, and again, I won't name names, but jumping aboard the news, trying to be the first to break the story. Now, I'm very much of the opinion, a story like that, you got to wait until the facts come out. There are people that lost their lives there, and you know that's the danger. Social media is a wonderful tool, don't get me wrong, and it can be used for good. But on that occasion, the immediacy of it, we all knew that something terrible had happened, the way that it was reported and the pictures and the video came out quickly. But then the speculation began. And at that point, you just have to take a step back, wait for the various bodies to make the official statement of what had actually gone on. And tragically, it would eventually come less than 24 hours later. And, you know, it goes without saying that we wish absolutely the families of those lost, you know, our condolences at what has been a tragic, tragic time, not only for Leicester City Football Club, the city of Leicester, but of the football community as well.
Great tragedy. And given the outpouring of grief from the family, from all those involved, from all those that have been watching on, it goes without saying as well, there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on the start of that Cardiff-Leicester game a little later on this afternoon. It kicks off at 7 p.m. It's not our feature game, but obviously there will be a lot of build-up to that as well. Some might turn around and say it's in bad taste, etc., but that's the nature of the beast, isn't it? There's going to be more interest on that game
afternoon. Absolutely.
For all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. The cameras will be trained into the players. And I tell you, Claude Puel has got a big few decisions today, because he'll have to have, you know, managed those emotional players over this week. How difficult it must be for Claude. And what he's also got to have done is study those players and see what kind of frame of mind they're in. So don't be surprised to see a bit of a different starting 11 for Leicester City. There is the other school of thought that will say every one of those players will put their hands up wanting to go out there and to honour Vichai's memory. But I think Claude today, that the team news will be very interesting. I mean, Kasper Schmeichel, who has been a wreck, as you rightly pointed out, or Arch pointed out, a close relationship with Vichai. What state of mind will he be in? May that necessitate a change of goalkeeper? That remains to be seen. We'll have the team news before we clock off at 7 o'clock. But one thing is for certain, every one of those players will want to go out today, perform to the very best of their ability, and win in the name of the former owner.
And Arch, let's spare a thought as well, not just for the current Leicester players, but also those that have been at Leicester, gone on. We saw Riyad Mahrez score, didn't we, for Man City, and then get very emotional afterwards whilst he was being asked about it, talking about Vichai as the father figure that he never really had, somebody who really encouraged his career. It's going to be interesting to see how they and the wider Leicester influence has had on other players that are now applying their trade at other clubs.
Well, what's been interesting for me is it's the football family at large, whether it be other English Premier League clubs, whether it be clubs in Europe, have all sent their condolences and respect to Leicester and for the tragedy. And we've hardly ever heard anyone speak in a bad way about the ownership at Leicester, what's happened there, the transformation in the city, not just with the football club, but the wider community, where the owners were very involved with charitable causes, with the hospital, with the education system at Leicester. They really bought into the family, the city, and invested there. So I think when you have ex-players who have left the club, and let's be honest, a few players moved on from Leicester, like Riyad Mahrez, to bigger clubs.
Kante.
N'Golo Kante. When they go back and say, look, a lot of it was due to this man, the investment they put into them to give them an opportunity to win the Premier League, to showcase their skills, and then go on to bigger clubs, was all due to the vision of the ownership there at Leicester. And they deserve everything. They show how to go about it the right way, with class and dignity, and invest in, find value where there probably wasn't, a lot of people didn't see value. Even Jamie Vardy came from non-league football. So they really did their research. They invested their money wisely and have really sort of, it's that real classic fairy tale story, the likes of which we may never see again in the Premier League, and the likes of which we never saw up until a couple of seasons ago.
We watch on with interest. The club, let the world grieve for the loss of Leicester City's owner. And then, of course, there will be other questions to be answered in the coming weeks and months, not just for Leicester City, but for other sporting investments as well. Let's get back to today's feature game. We're watching Bournemouth taking on Manchester United in the early kickoff in the Premier League. It is a little bit later for those that are tuning in going, hang on, why is it all later? What's happening? It's because the clocks have gone back last Sunday. So it is a little bit later in the UK, hence why our times have changed as well. Chris McCarty, question to you. Don't know if you know the answer as we watch another Bournemouth attack. They've been good so far, haven't they?
Bournemouth have, well, they should be 2-0 up. They really should. And Eddie Howe's face there tells its own story, because Bournemouth are causing Manchester United all sorts of problems down the right-hand side, down the left-hand side. They are being quick. They're being imaginative. They're being everything that Manchester United haven't been this season. Let's be very honest with it. 10 minutes on the clock, Ryan Fraser should score. He's clean through on goal. Terrible second touch that takes it onto his weaker left foot. He tries the effort. It is well saved by the feet of David De Gea. We have just seen, just a few moments ago, Junior Stanislas, who has played in beautiful ball across the penalty spot. He should hit the target. He flashes one wide. Bournemouth are dominating these early stages. One or two times Manchester United have got in, and as I say that, it's 1-0 Bournemouth. My goodness gracious me, that goal's been coming. And it's an absolute belter. It's shocking play from Manchester United. We'll see a replay of this one. But it's that man who I said will one day get England recognition. No doubt about it in my mind. Callum Wilson. What a fine goal this is. Chris Smalling shakes his head on the big screen. He needn't, because it's a wonderful move from Bournemouth. It's far too easy though. It's a corner out on that right hand side. It is eventually headed clear by Manchester United. I think it's Luke Shaw who gets it away, or Nemanja Matic. But it's all too easy. Who is that that switches off? Is that Alexis Sanchez? If it is, it's absolutely criminal. Paul Pogba jogs out. He's got Victor Lindelof there. It's Juan Mata. It's Juan Mata who is beat too easily. The reverse ball into the path of Junior Stanislas. He's got an easy job of getting it across the six-yard box. He does that. Left-footed finish. Past David De Gea, and you see there Jose Mourinho far, far from happy with his side's defending. Bournemouth have been brilliant, they've deserved that. 10 minutes on the clock, it's Bournemouth 1, Manchester United 0.
Interesting observation from BBC's Mark Michener, who's live down there at the Vitality Stadium. He's just tweeted, Premier League's clearly state that the colour and the design of the shirt and stockings worn by any goalkeeper when playing in league matches shall be a must be such as to distinguish him from the other players and from match officials. He's making the point. Have a look at the referee and have a look at the keeper. Very similar.
Yeah, David De Gea wearing the blue top, and it is very similar to what the referee is sporting. Of course, the referee with the black shorts and the black socks, David De Gea all in blue, but no doubt about it, there is a bit of a clash there. But I tell you what, there's no doubt that Manchester United are in a game here, because they are 1-0 down early on in this first half, and it ties in with what they've been doing in recent weeks. Too sluggish out the blocks, and Bournemouth have made them pay. Fred, Matic, Pogba in that middle of the park, and certainly Mata, Martial and Sanchez. We need more from those boys, or certainly Manchester United fans do, that's for
sure. Question for you, Chris, and I didn't get to ask it earlier, I just want to, I don't know if you know the answer. Is there a minimum number of seats that you need to have in order to play in the Premier League or not? The only reason I ask is when I was watching the build-up to this game, it's very
small.
Obvious that Bournemouth is very small compared to other grounds.
Yeah, the Vitality Stadium, I'll need to double check this, but it's definitely under 20,000. I think it may even be 18,000, I think, the Vitality Stadium. Not much more than that. And the simple question to that is that the Premier League certainly have a stadium. I don't want to use the word quota, that would be the wrong word. They have a certain standard that you must adhere to. It doesn't matter the size necessarily. And in actual fact, it's less than 12,000, the Vitality Stadium. Yeah, 11,360. It's a tiny stadium, smaller than some Scottish Premier League clubs, for goodness sake, Tom. And that's the scary thing. There was a report that came out a few weeks ago saying that, you know, the actual attendances in stadiums, the TV money is so rich these days that in actual fact, for I think it's half of the Premier League clubs, they don't necessarily need to play in front of fans to make a profit. That football has gone so the other way now. It's a globalised sport. We know that certainly the Premier League is. That the TV rights money would keep more than 10 clubs in the Premier League afloat. They don't need fans on game day. In the case of the Vitality Stadium, it is a tiny little pitch, but crucially, it will tick all the boxes from a safety point of view. Right. They would have made the necessary modifications coming up from the Championship that would get the tick. The Premier League give it the stamp of approval, so not necessarily does it need to be a 60, 50, 40,000 seat stadium.
I think I've read that there are plans either for a new stadium or to extend the stadium to much closer to 25,000. I think I read that quite recently. But I think to be sustainable in the Premier League, you still want to maximise your game day revenues, whether it be fans coming in, whether it be hospitality, and all those types of things. So I think it's important. But yeah, I do agree, Chris. The major revenue comes in television. Secondary is fan income or on the day income, whether it be hospitality, whether it be tickets sold.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because we often focus on the teams up north or the teams in London, etc. But if you look down to the south coast at the moment, I mean, there's a lot of competition for fans down there, aren't there? Because
Southampton, Bournemouth. I mean, we won't get
Pompey.
Portsmouth, yeah, flying high, League One. You've got Plymouth, Derek Adams, the former Ross County manager. He's started to see some results, although Plymouth remain in the bottom three.
Brighton,
down there as well, yeah. Who else have you got?
Exeter
City. No longer Paul Teasdale. He's now in charge of MK Dons. Yeah, you've got them down there. So, yeah, you've got a lot of clubs. And when you consider that Bournemouth and Southampton are in the Premier League, and Brighton, you've got three clubs down on the south coast, all in the Premier League. So yeah, you're not doing too bad. And if Portsmouth can find their feet, which there are signs that they're starting to do that under Kenny Jackett, they've had a wonderful start to League One. Plymouth struggling, as I say, but in recent weeks picking up one or two results. So it is good. It's a good time for the south coast.
Do send your thoughts through to us on 4001 if you'd like to have your say. That is our early kickoff. There are other earlies we'll bring you up to date with in just a few moments' time. But let's play out with the thoughts of Jose Mourinho. He obviously midweek had yet another FA charge. I think he knows his way around the courts rooms of the FA these days. He was asked about the appealing of the FA charge. To see what I had to say about it.
You know, the reason why I asked the club and the lawyers to appeal was because I was 100% that I was not guilty of these charges. But you never know how it ends. Yes, I'm pleased, but I know that I have to respect the process and I have to wait for what is going to happen next. But I only appeal if I feel that I'm not guilty. I don't appeal to lose my time or to make other people.
I'll just be here for the Bournemouth manager again as well. He says it's too early to judge Manchester United's season.
They perhaps wouldn't have had the start that they desperately wanted, but it's very early in the season, as I've said, and there's a lot of time, a lot of games, a lot of points available for their season to end up as they want it. So people draw so many conclusions at this stage of the season in terms of what's going to happen in the future, and you can't do that. So I think they're in a good form at the moment. They've performed well. If I look at their recent games, a big improvement there in terms of their general performances. So I think they come here in good spirit and good heart. So we are preparing for a tough game.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Keep thoughts coming in, 4001, if you'd like to have your say on the show today. A number of you are doing exactly that. We opened up the show asking about sportsmen, sportswomen, sports stars who've shifted their skills from one sport to another throughout their careers, or given up one sport to take up another sport. A number of you have been coming back with that. The reason we were asking this is because of Usain Bolt. He's obviously given up his track career, but turned his attention to football, got a little nod down in Australia, now moving on to pastures news, but we don't know where. This one from one of them, I'll ask, get the thoughts of Chris and Arch. They're with us down here from our broadcast position. We're up here on top as well, Brasti Rooftop Garden, if you want to come on down to watch the football, watch the rugby, watch all the live sport this afternoon. Brasti's the place to be. Bradley Wiggins to rowing. No, there's nothing in that, is there?
None. I don't think so, anyway.
He's doing the ergo thing, isn't he?
He was trying to set records. I think he declared an interest in trying to compete internationally in rowing, and then it gave way quite quickly for Sir Bradley.
Mo Farah to football?
No. Not happening anytime soon. If anything, and as he said to us the other day, I think we may well see Mo Farah back on the track before you know it.
Really?
Yeah, indeed.
This one from Simon. Hey Simon, thanks so much indeed for this one. Simon says, Rick Charlesworth, hockey and cricket, first class cricket for Western Australia, then Olympics hockey.
Yeah, good shout. Very talented cricketer and extremely good. I think a world class hockey player in his day, Rick Charlesworth, and a fine coach now. I think he's a well renowned international hockey coach.
No name with this one, but appreciate it. Thank you very much indeed. Nonsense
says one of our listeners. Look at Elise Perry, current yep. Aussie footballer and cricket, right?
Yeah, Elise Perry, I think, what was she? She was a teenager, certainly. She played football and cricket, 16 years of age. I think she made her debut in cricket first, and about a month later, she would represent the Australian women as well. She actually played in the Cricket World Cup and the soccer, or I say soccer, the Football World Cup as well. So absolutely, talk about a talented individual. Elise Perry definitely up there.
And another Simon getting in touch as well, saying, gentlemen, I think you will find the largest ground in the National League is bigger than Bournemouth's.
I'll get on that. Salford.
It's not a bad little call, is
Salford
it?
City, perhaps. I know they're splashing the cash. But, yeah, I mean, 11,360 we established is the Vitality Stadium's capacity. That is the home of Bournemouth. I mean, that is...
Is that the smallest in the Premier League?
Yeah.
By a long way.
I mean, I'm trying to think now. You've got Craven Cottage, which isn't...
I think that's still over 20,000, though.
The Craven Amex Cottage. Arena, Brighton's home. I mean, Southampton have moved into a bigger one. Yeah, undoubtedly Bournemouth. Burnley, Turf Moor isn't the biggest.
Huddersfield, 20-something
yeah.
20-something thousand, 25,000.
Yeah. I mean, that name changes. It was the McAlpine, then it went back to something else. I was there at the start of the season, and I've forgotten the name of Huddersfield. Just the McAlpine, we'll call it that for now. But yeah, still bigger than the Vitality Stadium. Undoubtedly, it is the smallest. I mean, yeah, when you're packing in less than 12,000, I mean, that is an attendance. Aberdeen, for goodness sake, average a bigger attendance than that, and they play in the Scottish Premiership.
Apart from semi-finals, where they don't want to show up.
Well, you say that, Archie, but there was still, what, 15 or so thousand that went down, made the trip down from Aberdeen to Glasgow. It was a Sunday at 4:30. A lot of individuals back at work, but let me tell you, if the SFA and if sense prevails and Aberdeen are given half the stadium for that final against Celtic, they will travel in their droves, will the dandies.
Yeah, apparently Wembley's the biggest at the moment, obviously.
Old Trafford.
And Bournemouth is the smallest,
yeah,
according to
Wikipedia.
Mind you, can't trust Wikipedia because they're calling it Bournemouth Dean Court Stadium
no,
as well.
No, it's the Dean Court. I guess it's called the Vitality Stadium for sponsorship reasons, and I'm sure it's one of those things that all Bournemouth fans, and if there are any listening, do let us know. It will always be Dean Court.
Isn't it one of those ones as well that is sort of in the middle of nowhere? I've not been down there, but
I've
apparently
not
it's in the middle of like a park or something like that.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. Is that right?
It's like the Huddersfield Stadium, beautiful little location. You come out of the centre of Huddersfield and you make your way to it, and it's set right in the kind of woods. You kind of go up a hill, there's woods all around it, beautiful trees. I mean, just a gorgeous little location.
But I think it's multi-purpose, so they play rugby league there as well.
Yeah,
I've actually been to rugby league matches there at Huddersfield.
Get your thoughts into us. 4-0, 0-0, 1. We are fast approaching the top of the hour. Plenty more to look forward to. But lest we forget, there are other games ongoing at the moment. We've got Bournemouth against Manchester United. As you've heard, Bournemouth taking a first half lead in that particular game. Manchester United looking to get back into the game. We've got, 25 minutes left on the clock. We've also got a very intriguing game up in Scotland at the moment. Simeone taking on Rangers. Chris McCarty?
Indeed, yeah. I'm keeping an eye on this one. 25 minutes on the clock. It remains St Mirren 0, Rangers 0. As I say, Rangers looking to bounce back after what has been a pretty miserable week, in all honesty. Beaten by Aberdeen in that League Cup semi-final at Hampden Park last weekend. Draw at home to Kilmarnock in midweek. What I can tell you is it remains St Mirren 0, Rangers 0. And my goodness, I didn't realise that St Mirren's centre half is Anton Ferdinand. So he's popped up in Glasgow, Paisley. And he's trying to make a career. Simeon Jackson as well up front, the former Norwich City man. My goodness, I learn something new every day. So they've got plenty of experience in that St Mirren side, and they'll be hoping that they can get one over on Rangers. Mighty Rangers, Steven Gerrard, facing the biggest test of his young managerial career to date. He has come out forcefully to say that the onus is on the players to take more responsibility to up their performance levels. You'll be hoping for a big performance. As things stand, though, it remains St Mirren 0, Rangers 0. And very quickly as well, yeah. Tom, over in Spain, it remains, and no surprise this one to any Atletico Madrid fans out there, because goals are becoming hard to come by for Diego Simeone's men. At half-time over there in the early kick-off, it's Leganés 0, Atletico Madrid 0.
Just a quick one. I don't want to become a bit of a stuck record on all things pitches and stadiums and all about become a bit statistical. Mind you, Archie's loving it. But I don't want to become a bit of a bore on that. But just been looking into this one. And you know, you go down one little avenue and you stumble upon something else. So get this. Despite there being rules and guidelines, the size of football pitches used by clubs to play in the English Premier League, several clubs do not meet the regulation size of 105 metres long and 68 metres wide. White Hart Lane was one of those stadiums, which is one of the reasons why they had to refurbish the stadium and, of course, adding new seating into that as well. Can you tell me, or can you think of any of the other teams that are currently in the Premier League and those that have been recently in the Premier League whose pitch dimensions do not actually comply with the official guidelines?
I would imagine Highbury had trouble back in the day. I would imagine that Loftus Road, Queen's Park Rangers, has a bit of trouble. Yep. I never think of the Loftus Road being a big pitch. Where else are we going? So, I tell you, the Dell, home of Southampton, would have had its problems all those years back before they went to into St Mary's. Who else has a small pitch? Let me have a think.
I can tell you there's one that's left the Premier League recently, within the last season.
Swansea?
No.
Within the last season. Aston Villa?
No.
Nah, they've got a, I was going to say, they've got a decent-sized pitch. Middlesbrough's a good-sized pitch.
London-based.
London-based. Who's went down from London? Watford in the Premier League? Charlton? No. Mm-hmm. Who's went down from London? Oi, oi, oi. Crystal Palace are in the Premier League. Arsenal, Chelsea.
Oh, actually, they didn't go down.
Millwall. They didn't go down.
You just said it, Crystal Palace.
Oh, Crystal Palace.
I get my teams wrong.
You got me there.
They had a shocker at the beginning. The miracle recovery, didn't
they?
Yeah,
they're still there.
They don't have a big enough pitch, apparently.
Interesting.
And these are the three that have surprised me. So, three teams in the Premier League at the moment whose pitch dimensions do not fit the actual regulations
of
105
metres
long and 68 metres wide.
Cardiff?
The three teams are Chelsea,
Ooh.
Everton, Liverpool. Have all got pitches that are smaller than the actual regulations.
Interesting. Goodison Park. Anfield, that surprises me a little bit. Always think of Anfield as being quite expansive.
Because obviously they've got the developments going on in the stadium and they've got the X amount of seats, etc. But in terms of the actual playing surface, regulations-wise, it's smaller.
You know what's quite interesting? I'm going to segue slightly and we know we're just going to go to a break. But when you look at other sports and you have very standardised rules and regulations and you go to other sports and they all have different pitch sizes, like cricket, different sizes of cricket grounds around the world, or look at baseball in America. You know, different old stadiums that are you know, hundreds of years old, yeah, have different stadiums. You know, Fenway Park, where the Boston Red Sox play, have the Green Monster, and the reason is they have the Green Monster is that's a short outfield, yeah, so you have to hit it over the Green Monster there. But you know, cricket grounds around the world, remember how big the MCG was. Then you go to some of the small bespoke grounds, you know, where Kent play, have a tree in the ground, yeah, at Kent and Canterbury. So it's amazing.
Five runs, isn't it?
Five
runs if you hit the tree?
I'm not sure the local rules.
Yeah.
But you go around the world and you look at different sports like cricket and like baseball and that, and in this day and age of really standardised protocols and processes and there must be this and that, then you have the nice little intricacies and things that just make sport a bit more interesting.
You hear about it in rugby as well, though, don't you? You know, the tight pitch or something like that. Or
Small in goal areas.
Small in goal areas as well, don't you? Don't tell Freddie Burns about those. He's probably still having nightmares about his in goal areas as well. But, yeah, you're right. You'd think in this day and age, given the money that TV is spending and given the fact, or is that the nuance that we want in sport? Do we want to get away from
another
that?
Another one, you look at Lords with the slope. I mean, you go to Lords, there's a massive slope across the ground. You think in this day and age you can level it off and it'll be flat, and the home of cricket has this massive slope from end to end.
I like those little variables. That adds to it. A part of winning a league, certainly in football, and football's my numero uno, of course. The it's about the Manchester Uniteds, the Chelseas, the Man Cities. It's the same for everyone going to a Bournemouth, going to, well, now an Anfield, a Goodison Park and a Stamford Bridge on a tighter, narrower or least length pitch, and getting a result. That's part of the beauty of it. I always think that if we all had glitzy stadiums, 60,000 with beautiful expansive pitches, more often than not we would know who would win each week, you know, and that's not what we want.
Another talker for you, therefore. If you'd like to share your thoughts with us, you can do exactly that. In fact, get in touch with the show. Tell us about these sporting arenas, the grounds, with those special little nuances that maybe we don't know about, whether it be the slope at Lords. What about your home ground, the team that you support in whatever sport that is? What is the little nuance, the little knowledge you can bring to the table with regards to those particular grounds? Do share your thoughts with us, please, on 4001.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.